And it's at this moment, with the ground of his vision prepared, that Jesus tells us the parable of the prodigal son, in which all of his startling themes about the Father's infinite love are interwoven, and in a very, very strange and beautiful way, if you really look at it. Let me just read to you the parable, which you may think you know, but when you hear it, you will hear all kinds of details that will renew its mystery. And he said, "A certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me.' And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would have fain filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, 'How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran, and fell on his neck, and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid, and that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And the father said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead, and is alive again, and was lost, and is found." What strikes anyone who meditates on this parable for long is the extremely unpatriarchal behavior of the father. His younger son demands his share of the inheritance, which in contemporary Judaic terms was shocking, tantamount in fact to wishing his father dead. And not only does his father not upbraid him, he says nothing. And he hands the whole inheritance over, respecting the freedom of his son's choice and putting his entire family's wealth at risk. This is crazy behavior in the context of the time, and shows, I think, just how profoundly Jesus believed God gave human beings freedom to invent their lives, and with the wealth of truth and gnosis that is within them. Then, when the father saw his battered and repentant son returning from a great way off, he did not stay where he was, just expecting his son to crawl to him and beg him forgiveness. He forgets every kind of patriarchal dignity. He forgets all the pain he might have felt, and almost shamelessly had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. He didn't wait for his son to embrace him. He didn't wait for his son to apologize. With a full heart, he overrides all blame and enfolds him in a free and wild embrace. This father is nothing like the stern and furious Jehovah of the Old Testament. Nothing in this father's character clings to righteousness or judgment. The essence and the core of his whole nature is a burning compassion. A compassion that sees immediately that the son has judged himself by the abandonment of his father's love and by his terrible suffering in strange lands, and now needs only to be restored to his old position and essential dignity to be healed. The only authority that the Father of Jesus claims is that of a love that desires only to bless. At first, the son is still too lost in his own guilt to be able to understand or even imagine the depth and all-embracing abandon of his father's forgiveness. And I think this shows Jesus' exquisite understanding of the sinful soul. Because of its own shame, which it brought upon itself by forgetting the laws of God's and its own dignity, it cannot comprehend the wildness of God's love, and still half-consciously hides from it in self-contempt. The son says, "I am not more worthy to be called thy son." The soul retreats from this vast outflow of God's love and forgiveness. It claims its own shame. It lives in its own darkness and refuses to open to the glory of the truth. But the Father doesn't say anything. He acts, and his compassion overflows in extravagant acts of welcome and blessing. The son is prepared to be treated as a hired servant. The father calls for the robe of a distinguished guest. The son no longer feels worthy to be called son. The father calls for a ring to be put on his finger, a ring of inheritance, and shoes to be brought for his feet. For God, every soul is sacred and blessed and always God's child. The soul may forget its home, may forget its inheritance, may forget its identity, but God never forgets and acts in thousands of secret and overt ways to remind the soul of its real nature and rewards the slightest movement of return with lavish displays of honour and recognition. Just like the shepherd and housewife when they found what they had lost, the father in the parable now calls for a great feast to be made in his son's honour. And bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. God wants the whole universe to rejoice with him when one of his children returns to him. His joy spills over into and illuminates the entire creation, creating ever more abundant life. At this point in the story, Jesus turns his attention to the elder brother, the righteous one, who had always been a good child and who he reveals now also needs healing. And this is the most wonderful aspect of the story for me in many ways. Just as the scribes and Pharisees hide behind rules and laws and their own sense of superior righteousness and so miss the wildness of God's love for all beings and cannot participate in its unconditional forgiveness and rapture, so the elder brother is furious at the treatment his reprobate brother is now receiving. He points out to his father that he'd always followed exactly what his father told him, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. The elder son is enclosed in a religious world of law, responsibility, obligation, comparison. His soul is not free to love with his father's love, or to be compassionate and know compassion's joy. He is trapped in the shadow of righteousness, just as Jesus is implying the scribes and the Pharisees are. Just as he does not judge his younger son, but embraces him, so the father does not judge his elder son, but tries to open to him the wonder and passion of his own love. And he said unto him, Son, in the Greek technon, a tender diminutive meaning baby or child, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. This all means not only all the father's power and possessions, but also all the glories of the father's inner being. The father is saying to his elder son, you have in you everything that I have in me, so you too can experience the great healing joy I am experiencing. You too can live in the sun of unconditional compassion. The father then continues, it was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. The father has tried to heal the pain of his younger son by restoring him to the dignity of sonship with great love and happiness. The father tries now to heal the subtler, but just as profound and limiting anguish of his elder son by revealing to him the true nature of the kingdom of God, that boundless compassion is its core, and that making merry, divine festivity, is its most accurate as well as its most lovely expression. Jesus himself constantly expressed his love of beings and life in feasts, and again spoke of the kingdom as a feast or banquet to which God was inviting everyone. And in the parable of the prodigal son, Jesus demonstrates with customary psychological brilliance that this kingdom has two main enemies, that sin that swerves the soul from the glory of its essential nature, and that man-made limited righteousness that traps beings in a judgment self-regard that forbid any participation in God's limitless joy. Both belong to the realm of illusion. The reality is feast, the reality is the glory of compassion, the kingdom on fire with the festivity of celebration. In giving this version of the true Father's mercy and compassion to an audience of Pharisees and sinners, Jesus was symbolically and with tremendous mystical courage trying to heal the essential illness of his and our patriarchal culture, its fear of a God created in its own fierce, cruel, savage, punitive image. This projection has terrifying power, and it keeps humanity agonized, depressed, and obsessed by rules, laws, and regulations. It is this projection, after all, that has justified all forms of patriarchal hierarchy and all systems of purity and exclusion. Jesus' vision of the Father, as the parable of the prodigal son makes clear, has nothing whatever to do with the terrible Father that kept the publicans and sinners convinced of their worthlessness and the scribes and Pharisees cowering behind a facade of frightened and hypocritical holiness. Jesus' Father is the Father met in deepest mystical experience, a Father who is also a mother, a Father whose nature is loving beyond all human imagination, a Father whose profoundest longing is not for judgment but for the festive reconciliation and harmony between beings birthed from love. It is this Father that Jesus calls with overwhelmed love in Aramaic, Abba, Daddy. It is to this Father, this Abba, and his infinite tenderness that Jesus' whole life is dedicated. It is this Father to which Jesus wants to awaken the whole of his world. It is this vision of a Father who is also feminine that molds Jesus' own spiritual nature, drawing him deeper and deeper into sacrificial love, and makes of Jesus himself a supreme example of divine human balance between masculine and feminine, a father-mother himself, the antithesis and radiant enemy of patriarchy in his every word, gesture, and loving movement. For Jesus, it is clear, I think, what was essential was to awaken to the extremity, the extravagance, the wildness, the madness in all human terms of the Father's love, the madness of his passion for all being and things, the madness of his desire to see the world transformed by his holy power and his eternal name. Any philosophy or any custom, however sanctified by tradition, any system of power or any system of influence that prevented the living experience of this love and blocked its outrageous expression in all the arenas of life was destroying the plan of love, rebelling sadly or demonically against the truth of the kingdom.